Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're chatting with John Rubino, founder and editor of the Dollar Collapse website. We will link to John's site below. And John, you sent us over a handful of topics here to touch on, and a lot of these topics are somewhat related and very relevant to really any investor out there right now. Dealing a lot with interest rates, we are seeing yields broadly rising in the U.S., and that rise, especially on the long end, really started near the tail end of last year, has continued higher this year, and that ties in really with the expectations that central banks, especially the Fed, is going to start a rate hiking cycle sometime soon, whether it is in the next meeting or the following meeting. Fact of the matter is, the expectations have grown so much that now, instead of just expecting, say, one rate hike this year, some markets and forecasters are expecting up to four rate hikes this year. Overall, John, we're seeing yields rise, which is telling us investors are expecting these rate hikes. The Fed has told us these rate hikes are coming. What's the big picture in your eyes, understanding the 2022 very different than the last few years with this tightening cycle that's going to be underway?
Hey, Corey. Hey, Shad. Well, I think the key word is not transitory. For most of the past year, the markets have been kind of on the fence about whether the inflation that we were seeing was going to continue. So interest rates didn't really respond to the actual inflation numbers the way they might otherwise have. But now they're kind of starting to, as people start to think, okay, well, maybe this is going to go on longer, you know, which is how the human mind works. We extrapolate our recent experience into the indefinite future. And the markets are starting to do that now. At least that's one explanation for rates going up. But rates are rising now. And it's not just the U.S. There's a chart out there in one of the links that I sent you when we were talking about what to talk about today that shows Australia and Japan 10-year treasury rates, basically tracking the U.S. treasury 10-year yield. And they're all going up pretty dramatically lately. So it's now becoming a global phenomenon. Rising interest rates. And just as really low interest rates were a global phenomenon for a long time, where everybody was pushing rates down kind of simultaneously, now the opposite is true. And that's a very big deal for the global economy because we can't handle higher interest rates. They're, beyond a certain point, the system will just collapse. And we don't know what that point is, but as rates go up, they're obviously heading for that brick wall. So we'll see how far it goes. But right now, the trend is in a really ominous direction. If you've got financial asset prices at perfection levels, in other words, they only are worth what you have to pay for them now in an absolutely perfect world where everything goes right. And then you've got this big thing going wrong with interest rates rising dramatically. So we're headed for some kind of a decision point in which one thing or the other has to break. Either interest rates have to go back down or financial asset prices have to reset to take into account a higher cost of capital. Very interesting time right now.
Well, John, just another observation on the rates going up. You know, yes, it's a global phenomenon. Most central banks and most countries are starting to hike their rates. Some have already started before the Fed. And so some of this may be anticipation that, you know, the rates are going to be going up. But also, let's keep in mind, it's an inverse to who's buying bonds. So what that also tells you is, when rates go up, it's because people are buying less bonds. Well, who's the biggest buyer of bonds that's buying less? The Fed. So it's pretty clear that as they buy less bonds, rates are going up, but it's still nowhere close to where inflation is. Let's remind listeners, inflation, the CPI reading just came in at 7%. The PPI came in over 9%. So even at 1.8, or even if it was 2 or 3 or 4, it's still way below where inflation is. So do you think the markets will start to factor in that we're kind of in a pickle here?
Well, yeah, I think that's the most terrifying stat that exists in the world right now is real interest rates. Because, yeah, you could have interest rates go up if current inflation continues as it is. And you could have interest rates double or triple from here and still be strongly negative. And, you know, that does, like you said, put us in a pickle. The Fed is in this box right now where if they don't try to, restrain inflation with higher interest rates, inflation could run out of control. But if they do, they could blow up the global financial system. They've got so much that they have to do, given how negative real rates are right now, that it is absolutely not clear how they do it. In fact, I would go so far as to say it's impossible. You cannot fix what's wrong right now with monetary policy. You can only cause one crisis or another crisis. but you don't get a crisis-free future from here.
Fair enough. That's also the business cycle and the market cycle, right? Natural corrections, which it does seem like central banks, not just the Fed, are trying to extend these cycles so that crashes come less often. But look, overall, central banks, mostly around the world, are going to go about this fairly slowly, it seems like. They are going to be watching the market very closely and watching the economic data, like inflation and even like economic growth. And that's another thing that you sent over to us, dealing with GDP forecasts dropping, especially in the U.S. We have the GDP now produced by the Atlanta Fed that was at almost 7% and pretty quickly has been forecasted now down to 5% on the back of weak retail sales numbers. That's also tying in with generally the expectations that economies will slow a little bit, but they are growing at quite a fast pace when you compare that to the last, let's say, 10 years. How does this play into the picture, John? Because the central banks, look, they're going to be slow about this and they're going to be watching a lot of these different factors.
Yeah. Well, yeah, GDP growth recently has been almost at overheating levels. In other words, that kind of plays into the inflationary economy scenario where we're just growing too fast, you know, and that's pushing up prices and that's a huge problem. But lately, some of the numbers that have been coming in have been weaker, and that's leading to a decline in the year ahead and definitely this quarter GDP forecasts for a lot of people. And an analyst named Mike Shedlock took the Atlanta Fed 5% number and adjusted it for much lower retail sales recently. And he's kind of at 2% right now. So 2%, if that turned out to be how fast we're really growing, is stagflation territory. You know, that's like stalling speed for the economy. And then we're in, you know, if you can imagine something worse than accelerating inflation, it would be stagflation, where the economy isn't growing, but inflation is rising. So then what do you do? You know, if you're a policymaker, you got to keep the economy growing. But to do that, you might accelerate inflation, which has a, you know, horrendous impact in the future. And so, you know, it comes back to these guys being in a box with no real fix. And if GDP growth slows down around the world, which rising interest rates would tend to do that too. You know, if long-term rates go up, that's a higher cost of capital. That means it's harder to make money when you borrow money at that part of the yield curve. So that would tend to slow economic growth in and of itself. So say we get that, then we're kind of back in the 1970s, only in a much worse way, because in the 1970s, this happened. The economy wasn't growing very fast, but inflation was accelerating and nobody knew what to do. And, you know, we ended up pushing interest rates in the U.S. up to nearly 20% in a lot of cases. And mortgage rates, you know, you could have taken out a 16% mortgage back then if you wanted to buy a house. We can't do that now. So the last time around, we were able to fix this kind of a stagflationary situation. This time, we don't have the tool that they used last time. So it's not clear what exactly we can do, you know, and that's another one of the, it's probably something that's keeping Fed governors up at night in the U.S. because they're not very smart, but they are smart enough to understand that their situation may be unfixable and that they're going to get blamed for it. So, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of Ambien being taken at the Federal Reserve right now just to try to get through the night and get up and you know, try to figure out what to do the next day.
That's a funny thought, John. But just going down the rabbit hole of if we do see that GDP number scale down, even below where the Atlanta Fed has it. Let's say we split the difference between the Atlanta Fed and Mish, it comes in around 3 or 4%. It's still slowing growth to some degree. Could it be possible that they're getting ready to do these rate hikes into a slowing growth environment? And in that kind of environment that would be somewhat stagflationary, if you look back to the 70s, in particular, I'm interested to see what happens with energy and gold. In the 70s, we saw energy racing higher like we do now. We saw wages racing higher. We saw all that inflation. And like you mentioned, you could buy a house and have a 16% interest rate on your loan. But at the same time, that slow growth economy really petered things out for the whole decade. And gold didn't do much at the beginning. It didn't do something until years into that decade. So do you think that's a similar situation here where gold is not responding to all this? It's surprising a lot of people, despite all that backdrop we just laid out. Do you think it may just take gold a while to kick in gear when the general masses wake up that we're going to be stuck in this for a little while?
Yeah, the way the precious metal cycles tend to work, if you look at the charts, is they, you know, they do okay. They're disappointing, but still, you know, all right. And then in the final 2 years of the cycle, they go straight up. You know, you have these parabolic rises. And the reason for that is to be found in the human mind. You know, it takes us a long time to change our minds. We get an idea, and we tend to ignore new information coming in that contradicts it until the amount of information is overwhelming. And then we jump on to the other side and don't want to hear anything contradicting that. And so in an inflationary environment, it takes a while for people to conclude that this thing is going to go on forever, basically. Or, you know, as we might have coming, a really volatile environment. If people start worrying about extreme volatility in the sense that nothing is trustworthy anymore, then they start looking for the things that are at least relatively trustworthy. And that's where precious metals come in. You know, you can look at something with a 3,000 year history of holding its value and then be reasonably sure that it'll make it through the next 10 years for you, even as crazy as the next 10 years look like they're going to be. And so money pours into precious metals in that kind of circumstance. And, you know, we're not there yet, but as crazy as the next few years are likely to be, there will almost certainly be a time when the market's focus shifts to real assets, of which gold and silver are the prime examples. And then we'll see them do their thing. You know, we'll see that huge run up in gold and an even bigger run up in silver that pull the mining stocks along. You know, that'll happen. That's a 2-year thing that's out there. And there's no way to know exactly when it's coming. But this year looks like it's kind of a table setting year for that kind of an attitude, because just so much is happening that each little piece of which is very scary, and you put it together and it's a very scary macro picture right now.
Well, let me ask you this. Is it possible that they are going to slow walk the rate hikes and just do 0.25%, maybe even if they got aggressive 0.5% rate hikes for a series of hikes? Because most people are factoring in 3 to 4 hikes for this year with the hope that inflation will start trending down. And if we saw inflation trend down, kind of a disinflationary situation because of some of the supply chain bottlenecks being resolved, could they be trying to slow walk it, hoping that real rates actually come down some? Could that be their plan over the next year or so? And do you think that would get us out of the danger zone?
Well, that's what they hope for, but it's highly unlikely because, you know, as far as the slowing economy goes, just long-term rates going up, which the Fed is not at the moment trying to control. If they went up, so it doesn't matter what short-term rates go up. If they go up by like half a point or something like that, you cannot fix 7 or 8% inflation with a 2 or 3% Fed funds rate. So that just won't work. And if long-term rates keep going up, then that means the Fed and the other central banks will have to stop tapering. They'll have to go back to buying massive amounts of government bonds with newly created currency, which will turbocharge inflation. I don't see any real way out of this. And they would definitely like to do everything gradually. First of all, because that's just the way they've always done it. You know, they very seldom make really big interest rate changes, unless it's some kind of an emergency, like a war or something like that. So they would like to go quarter point, quarter point, quarter point over the course of like a year. And it's not clear that the economy is going to let them do that. But there are so many uncertainties now. You know, we still don't know for a fact that inflation is going to continue at 6 or 7 or 8% or 12 or 13% in real terms, in legitimate terms, like most analysts now believe. It could be that a lot of these commodities turn back down and everything. We just don't know. And that kind of plays into the really macro part of this, which is that when you create way too much new currency, you don't necessarily get any one thing, but what you do get is instability. You know, weird, dramatic things will happen when you flood the system with a bunch of mostly unneeded money. You know, people will just start doing crazy stuff with that money. And that crazy stuff will feed into market fluctuations that are very unpredictable. And I think that's the only thing you can say with certainty going forward, is that that volatility is a buy right now. You know, that's what you should be betting on, is really extreme things happening. And for the Fed and for policymakers in general, this is such a baffling time that there's no way these guys can, you know, sitting around a conference table drawing on models that were flawed to begin with, There's no way they can make any coherent policy that actually has a positive effect. So, you know, I wouldn't venture to predict where the 10-year treasury yield is going to be a year from now. It could be much higher, it could be much lower, or where stock prices are going to be. You know, there's just no way to know any of this stuff. But everything is at risk right now. You know, there could be a collapse in the bond market. There could be a collapse in the stock market. There could be spikes in all kinds of asset prices going forward. There's just no way to know. So in a world like that, real things tend to be more attractive than financial things, just because financial things depend more on the value of the currency. And that's, you know, inherently unpredictable right now. And real stuff has utility. So if you, you know, if you own real things, that's not 100% safe, but it's relatively safe compared to your other options right now.
Well, John, I guess we'll see how it all plays out overall, though. What about the potential that, look, the retail sales number for December was pretty bad, and retail sales, consumer spending, is a key component of inflation if maybe the consumer is running out of money, or quite frankly, they, look, aren't going to be spending, aren't going to be buying as much because that post-pandemic, maybe sugar high wears off. Then does that bring down inflation? Because, look, we do need to consider maybe inflation won't stay elevated forever. I realize the Fed has been wrong on the transitory aspect, but higher inflation doesn't seem to have crippled the system yet.
Yeah. Well, see, the consumer spending side of this is pretty easy to understand because we had all those stimmy checks and other kinds of government help for, what, 1.5 years, at least in the U.S. And I don't know what Canada's doing, but I assume that they're very generous, too, in times like this. So people had money to spend, and they spent it. But lately, we're seeing credit card debt start to spike, which means people have run through their savings and the stimmy checks that they were getting and everything, and now they're borrowing money. And that's something you can only do for a little while. So it's not a surprise that consumer spending would be slowing down as people run through their ready cash and have to start borrowing. And you're also seeing that in used car prices, which is one of the really baffling inflation spikes that we've seen in the last couple of years, where used car prices went up to almost new car prices, which is just crazy when you think about how that market normally works. But lately, used car prices are starting to roll over. So it wouldn't be a surprise if consumers ran out of money and then we saw the economy slow dramatically, which would slow down inflation to an extent. So we could be, you know, 6 months from now, we could be talking about, hey, are we dropping back into recession here? You know, and that would allow the Fed to capitulate and take back the tapering and start, you know, running QE hot again and start cutting interest rates, because that's out there, too. You know, there's one last part of the cycle where the central banks of the world capitulate, push interest rates down even into deeply negative territory, and then introduce their central bank digital currencies as a way of trapping us in Fed accounts that allow them to manipulate the money supply and control our spending and everything in a really, you know, totalitarian sounding way. So, you know, that all has to happen still, too. And a slowing consumer spending driven economy could be the trigger for that next stage in this process. So, yeah, that's a complete possibility. And, you know, through this whole thing, you kind of just want to be owning gold and canceling your newspaper subscription and just not paying attention. I think that would be the psychologically most healthy way to approach the next few years.
All right, John. Well, some people might take your advice on that. Anybody that has been invested in gold in the last year and reading the newspapers probably realizes that they've missed out on some good gains in other markets. And we'll see how the rest of this year, even the rest of this month, goes, because the volatility comment has been very true this year. And there are some key markets coming too, some pretty interesting technical areas where a break either higher or lower is expected, and we'll see which direction the markets and some of these other metals take. John, thank you as always for your time. We'll chat again in another couple weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thanks, guys. You too.